or else, but the felony issue, whether you think it's a license to hunt him down and shoot him, was a big issue. The other issue that we've already covered dealt with the contingent fee agreements and that issue that, you know, we drew dropping that out, and I appreciate the Senate's concern about it, but the House members, at least I represent, these were major issues to them.
Yes, Joyce.
Are they major enough to go to 10? In the joint and several? I mean, I'm serious about that. That's the kind of stuff we need to kind of get out on the table. Do you think? Do you think that they're...
Pardon me. And Joyce, could you repeat that question?
I asked if they would be major enough so that we could get the joint and several back to 10.
Well, if the mood of the committee is going to soften them up, it's major enough that they wouldn't even consider reducing from 20, I'll tell you that.
Well, of course, it's my...
It's hard for me to see this as a big issue.
Well, I can't see it as a big issue either, but... And if it had been my motion, I would have moved to drop the whole subject out, but... Okay, I think we kicked it around long enough to kind of know where we are. Let's move on to something else.
We have adopted Section 9, and then council will come back with the
members. We've adopted Section 9 on a temporary basis, and we're coming back to it. And we're going to work on, if Paul wants to pursue that idea of his, we can work on that. That shouldn't be too hard to come up with something.
Eric, can you try and get something drafted up on that?
I'll have to talk to you afterwards.
Okay.
But we can draft something.
All right, page 13 now.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move the de-engrossed version with substitutions. On line 21, I would strike 30 days and insert 60.
Now, wait a minute. Did I hear you right? Did you say you were moving the D?
There are going to be some lines struck as I go through it. I move the D striking on line 21, the 30 days to 60. On line 22, 120 days. On line 26, following the period and concluded, strike from the owner through line 31, party complaint. The differences then in the C and D would be may on line 25 versus shall on line 40 in the C engrossed.
No. All right, I lost me on that one. What you're saying is that it allows the defense in the answer, whenever the defense thinks it would be a smart idea, and I can't imagine a case where the defense wouldn't think it would be a smart idea, to counterclaim for wrongful use of civil process and name the plaintiff's attorney and, you know, the problem we've discussed before. That's where you are if you... that's why subsection 3 of the C engrossed is my strong preference.
Well, can council?
Well, could I ask a question of Representative Dix? Is the intent of deleting that language on lines 26 through 31 to prohibit bringing the subject in a counterclaim or raising it as a defense?
The language all goes together, I think, Representative Dix, is what council is suggesting. You take 3, you can't separate parts of 3 in the D and gross because it all goes together.
Well, let me change my motion then. It would probably be easier and to...
It'd be the C and gross with the change
of the
days.
I would move the C and gross with the change of the days. Can perhaps the chair of council can explain to me the difference between may and shall?
Yes.
In the two versions.
Right. In subsection 3 of the C engrossed, if you're going to make a claim that the original action was frivolous or non-meritorious or malicious or whatever, you have to commence that action after the conclusion of the first case. You would have to plead and prove that the first case ended with a defense verdict. In your favor, in other words, if you were the defendant. And it would be mandatory. In other words, subsection 3 states the present Oregon law. Present Oregon law does not allow you to mix these things up.
Fine. That's so moved.
So it
with the change in the number of days.
Representative Dix's motion is the C engrossed version with a change on line 36 from 30 to 60, and on line 37 from 90 to 120. Is that right?
That is correct.
And what you're thinking on that expansion of the time period there?
I've talked with members of both the defense bar and plaintiff's bar, and the 30 and 90 is most people feel is unworkable. It's easy for us to sit here in committee and put those number of days in, but they felt just for the process, it would be easier if it was 60 and 120 to, and that was my thinking. It's not a major issue. It was a suggestion with regard to process more than anything else.
Okay.
If there's severe objection, I'll withdraw the motion, but.
Well, I don't have any severe objection, but I'm not too sure that all that much time is necessary. I guess I'm kind of indifferent to it. Paul, what do you think? Anything on that?
Well, that's not the major change of the process. If Representative Dix is successful, I would like to revisit this and discuss the Section 3 again of the D version. Perhaps now would be the time, Bill.
Now's the time. We might as well.
The issue raised in filing an action, a similar action that Representative Springer raised the questions with regard to civil procedure in the bar. I have some language, and Senator Brenneman has the material with him, that would simply deal with Section 3, keeping it in, or subsection 3, and striking the language, the last sentence of the paragraph, and putting in, if, however, the claim, cross-claim, or third-party complaint produces an unresolved conflict with the disciplinary rules of the Oregon State Bar, the court may try the issue separately pursuant to ORCP 53B, which I think is reaches a better compromise between the process. That way, the frivolous action could be dealt with either by the plaintiff or the defendant. And if it is not, if the judge were to rule that it did not or it did conflict with the civil procedures process, that they could move to have it tried separately, which was an issue that both Bill and Dick raised.
How would that work if in the counterclaim the plaintiff's attorney were named as a co-defendant?
Well, the language that I struck was the language that counsel suggested that would not disqualify counsel. And this issue, depending on what the judge dealt with it, would presumably not disqualify counsel either. However, if he felt it would, that they'd have to wait until the action was done and pursue it separately. It's not my intent to disqualify counsel. The intent is to deal with these frivolous actions when they're taken, rather than waiting and letting somebody get beat down by the process and perhaps financially drained before they can take counteraction.
Well, go ahead, David.
Poor financially drained insurance companies.
Unfortunately, the tort system applies to more than just insurance companies, Dick.
Seems to be all we hear about.
David.
Well, there's one other aspect to this, and that is, I know physicians are extremely concerned, and it seems that the physicians I talk to, they believe every suit is frivolous and want the opportunity to counterclaim immediately. And I'm not sure that's the best use of the process, nor am I sure that every suit is frivolous. I think a frivolous lawsuit depends on your point of view. And I know I know the intent of what Representative Phillips is trying to get at. I'm a little bit concerned about the process.
Well, that's the thing, because we certainly are providing in this, no matter whose version we adopt, we're certainly providing some new sanctions for non-meritorious lawsuits in two or three places. We're really taking care, I think, of that issue. So sanction is and it's not that this is really strong medicine, it's just that it is a procedural situation. I just can't even imagine in my wildest dreams how it would work. But anyway, that's...
Chairman, this is one of the issues that I feel real strong about, based on my conversations with circuit court people back home. And since we have used the Washington example, I think there are people who looked into Washington and say it's never really used, you know, it's never really used up there, and I don't know why it isn't used, but it's on the books, it's very rarely used, so I'm not sure that that's a good enough reason why we had an institute here. And on the people that I see in my, talk to in my circuit courts, they don't see this at all, but it's cumbersome for them.
All right. Well, where we are at the present time, then, is there's tentative approval of the C and Gross with a change of, in the times that Representative Dix has indicated there. That's where we are at the present time. So we'll...
Hello. For the record, Jim. I'll object.
Yes.
I do, too.
I understand. All right. Here we're talking about non-meritorious lawsuits. Here's one thing: the House has got material on page 14, which we hadn't sent Bill 222. I guess we've got any argument about that, right? Federal Rule 17. Okay. Well, assume that that's the agreement of the committee. Then.
Is this the point where we can pick up anything else from 222?
Yes. This is the point where we can do that.
It seems to me there were, now I know there's a big fight about cross claims, counterclaims, all that stuff, third party practice. And I don't know how much time we want to spend on that issue here today, if at all. But if I recall, counsel or senator, there were some other parts in 222 that didn't get much discussion that maybe we ought to just take a moment and look at. I think one had to do with the prayer. Is that
yeah,
correct? Whether or not
right.
The state, we always, I know during the interim task force, it's a little piddly issue. It doesn't seem like much, but it seemed like something that could be corrected fairly easily. And I was never sure why it got dropped or why it wasn't considered. And that would be some states, I guess, just you don't state the amount that you want, your claim for relief. You don't state a dollar amount until just prior to trial, the parties stipulate what the amount claimed will be for damages, and you avoid these kinds of, we're dealing with perceptions and a lot of issues here, and one of the perceptions has to do with whether or not...
Every suit's $1 million suit.
Every suit's $1 million suit.
I'm having Senate Bill 222 put in front of us, so
here,
you see what that
here,
we
yes.
got,
it's
see what
rule
that language is.
Claims for relief.
That particular part of 222 did not
appropriate.
As far as I know, did not evoke any discussion to speak of and wasn't controversial. In 222, you know, everybody knows the hang-up is the third-party practice part.
Yeah, I, Representative Phillips has shared this with me. I'd be glad to pass it down so others have it.
I think,
Mr. Chairman, I've asked. Is that 222? Oh, great.
Version.
Well, I've got several.
Here's
the four you drafted separately. I've got 222. I think this is the way it came on from you guys. And here's the...
Oh, it'd be...
So this is the way it came on.
No. We didn't. That's not the way it came on.
Ian Gross, 222.
That was
the... That was the original.
Yeah. It would be... an amendment to ORCP 18 is shown on page 3 of A and Gross. I think that's what you're talking about, isn't it, Dick?
Well, I think so, although Council has shared with me some amendments, -94. Council, can you advise me whether or not these amendments are identical to what the Senate passed?
I'll have to read it. I don't.
Well, how do folks feel conceptually about that while we're comparing the language? Is that...
I don't particularly want to deal with it in the bill here myself.
Do you have any objections as to the content, or is it just the fact that it may be collateral to our other discussion?
I think perhaps it would be best to work our way through it and come back to these quote, extra issues, and that's no comment as to the substance of it, it's more of a comment as to the process.
Okay, John, is that kind of the way you feel about it?
Just work on.
Do you have any, not the substance of it so much as the...
Right, well, I think a little too. I don't see anything wrong with it being filed in the amount they're talking about.
Well, we'll come back to it, and in the meantime, council can check this.
Anything else considering that you want to put on the table?
From 222?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see the whole thing in, but I don't know...
Whole thing of 222? You want a bill? Obviously.
It's kind of seemed like a package, I thought, coming from the Senate. I got so used to working with it as a package on the task force that...
Your standard power never ceases to amaze me.
It was a well-crafted, well-thought-out three-part bill, there's no question about that. Oh, absolutely.
Was crafty.
I recognize the Senate's wisdom in that,
Well, all right, let's come back to that. I think it would be, when we're talking about what to do to deal with the cost of liability insurance and what to deal with the cost of litigation and what to do about, well, about that, not about, it wouldn't have anything to do with availability. Certainly in terms of the cost of liability insurance, there is no better way to cut the costs and to zero in on the cost of litigation itself, and the elimination of third-party practice in tort cases is going to reduce the cost of litigation. There's just no argument about it. And that ought to reduce insurance costs. Well, we'll come back to that anyway. Here's one that's real simple. That's on page 15. There's no problem there, is there?
I'd like to move Representative Phillips' amendments before he gets a chance, but I wanted to see if we'd come up with a language that I think we discussed and had some agreement on that talked about making this information also available to a person who'd been injured, for example.
We haven't got it yet. It's down in LC being drafted, which in addition to, it's the 140 amendments, there are some minor changes being made saying that the information be releasable to the quote victim.
Sure.
And also on the state police raised a question of they'll notify the social host when possible. So there's some, I wouldn't mark them down as substantive changes. They're in concurrence with what we discussed yesterday. But Max just nodded that they're down in LC being drafted.
Well, I think, I look at this material in four parts. I think that we agreed on section 16? All right.
Sure.
Then that's one part. The second part is what we've just been talking about, and I'm iffy as a dickens on that myself, but I take it that the committee maybe is interested in pursuing something on section 15. Then I divide, I put subsection 3 up there on line 26 in one category, and I put the other two in a category. So the last category I mentioned is something that I would, I'm suggesting that we remove that. We discuss the question of clear and convincing evidence, which is part 2.
Well, Mr. Chair, can I...
Go ahead, let's discuss this.
I didn't want to cut you off. I just wanted to kind of repeat an earlier issue that I guess I posed, and that had to do with Representative Calori's bill, the original House Bill 3116, which, you know, I realize the Senate didn't take up the liquor issue very much, really. The House did, so I know you obviously, other than maybe my discussion, maybe didn't know what Representative Calori's bill did. It addressed the same section. I think it was supported by the Governor's Task Force on DUII, and that changes the standard basically from up there where we talked about a social host or licensee has served or provided to allowing a person to consume alcoholic beverages also once they're visibly intoxicated. So I would just mention that as an issue if we're going to get into the substance there in one and two very much.
Well, I guess to avoid that kind of debate, as I said yesterday, and it seemed to, I hear Major Howells, the section 16 and 15 I think we've agreed on, and I would only move sub, at this point, sub 3 of section 13.
Striking sub 1 and 2?
For the time being, yes.
Does that include the 15? You were dealing that with that in the separate.
I thought we already.
In a separate Phillips amendment here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of a tentative agreement we've got on 15.
Okay.
Okay. Is there any objection to that then? All right. That's the tentatively adopted by the committee. Then that on page 15 of the Green Book, the language on lines 18 through 25 be deleted. And that we consider revising section 15 in some way. Everything else would remain in.
Yeah, and substantively, you've got the section 15 with some changes being made to represent Joyce's concern of yesterday on the release of information.
Yeah.
So that's now being done.
Okay.
Excuse me, Representative Phillips, this would be then amendments to the dash 140 amendments?
Yeah. As you recall, there was a question about the victim getting information, and then the state police came to me with regard to the section on social hosts, and at any rate, it's down in council right now.
Oh, all right. Where'd you get this?
This was handed out last night. Was the dash 140 handed out last night?
Yeah.
And I just...
And we're working, and you're working further on that?
They're working further on that section.
Well, let's take a look at page, I think it's fair to say that we're still together on page 17. There's no problem on that. B and Gross added, a new clause in the language there. I think we've already said we're okay on that. I just don't want to presume too much here. Any problem with that? Page 18, we're together on.
Let me ask, just for the record, why is page 18 part of the liability insurance crisis?
That's a good question. Probably because the ABC lobbyist was hanging around and managed to get our judiciary committee to slip that in.
Well, seriously, I'm kind of, I don't think I'm going to change a policy decision, but I'd just kind of like to know for my own curiosity's sake, who are the winners and who are the losers?
Actually, there wasn't, as far as we could tell, there wasn't any objection to it, and I don't know who the losers were.
Yeah, it was non-controversial.
And I don't know why there's some great advantage of having it in here other than probably...
There are apparently construction contracts in which one of the parties is required to indemnify a second party for the second party's sole negligence. In other words, the second party doesn't have to pay even though the second party is negligent. Now, since I don't practice in the construction area, I don't know how often those things arise, but apparently it's troublesome in the construction industry and creates problems between the parties, and that's policy issue is whether you're going to allow a party that is negligent to get off the hook financially. The language here would prohibit that.
Well, I guess we're dealing with a freedom of contract, which two parties agree in a contract, unless there's some pretty strong social policy or public policy otherwise.
To answer that, I think the feeling was that the oftentimes little subcontractor or contractor is kind of pushed into a situation where he can't really resist the demands of some stronger entity, and they're kind of forced to sign up on this thing, and they take their chances, and something like that. If you're interested in further rationale, I think Joyce is correct. There is definitely no one that appeared in opposition, and I'm sure that would have surfaced.
I'm trying to read. I'm not an expert in this area, as I'm sure is painfully obvious, but I defy anybody to read 30140 in its current form and tell me what it means. I mean that seriously. Tell me what it means and tell me how this amendment affects it.
I'm not going to volunteer to do that. I'm not too sure I'm that conversant with the thing. But if you're serious, I think it might be worth...
Well,
it'd be worth a couple of minutes to have Kalinowski come in here and explain that.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, maybe Ms.
Yes,
Paul.
Excuse me. I think I'm the only person raising this issue. I guess whatever point I've tried to make has been made, although I still don't understand what it does or why we're doing it.
I'm not saying I do either.
I'll defer to the majority, clearly.
Well, I guess just to let Representative Springer get his objection, I'll go ahead and move the section, and then we'll...
I don't think he's objecting to it.
Okay.
I am.
Yeah, I think...
Orion?
I would move section 25.
I want to make sure I got a perfect scorecard with the
okay. All right, then the record will show Representative Springer's objection to the adoption of section 25 of the D engrossed and C engrossed bill.
Thank you.
All right. Then on page 19, the chair will move the deletion of that material from the D engrossed bill.
Talk about a provision here. Where it is that? It's included in this package of amendments, if I can put these down.
Okay.
For consideration.
What is substitute?
Yeah, substitute motion or section.
Did you want to talk about
it? It's listed on the second page. There enough there for everyone?
Yeah.
Second page, line 14, referring to 6.
Yeah. 14 to 27.
Well, I see. I get it.
So you're really starting page 1. Page 27, right? Yeah.
Well, on this issue, it's page 10, lines 21 through 31, starting on line 14 here.
-129.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that deals with this issue.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask someone to explain to me how this relates to liability insurance?
Well, let's find out. Anybody can give us the answer?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Every time when we discussed it, we addressed that question yesterday. It's some of our belief that in the evidentiary process and timeliness and the whole process is improved if you improve just one segment of it, and this is one segment that we believe that needs improving, and I certainly let Senator Brenneman expound upon that.
Mr. Chair, there are certainly instances when a person who's filing a claim has been previously injured and may be trying to use that previous injury unrelated to the claim to base a claim for their current injury. Am I making myself clear? And
And those records need to be open to the defense so they can review those and see whether or not the injuries being claimed are part of the current claim.
Well, I certainly appreciate that point of view, but...
That's why any physician previously treated.
And that's a legitimate concern, but on the other side, I think, Senator, you'd recognize another legitimate concern that basically we authorize the defense, which has, in terms of its resources, certainly far more resources than the plaintiff most times, to go on a fishing expedition throughout that person's entire medical history and to contact every physician that that person has ever seen for any problem whatsoever. I think that is really overreaching in terms of the particular problem you've identified. I mean, you've identified a legitimate problem, and I think there's a legitimate way to deal with that, but I would target it with the approach of a scalpel and not a meat axe.
Well, can you answer this for me, Dick? On the language on line 20 there, for any medical condition alleged in the complaint,